Argument is United States versus Gray. Ms. Connor or Mr. Connor?
Please, the court. Good morning. I'm Carrie Connor, and I'm here today on behalf of Wynell Gray. We come before the court on this appeal in an interesting circumstances with an interesting defendant. In this case, the government actually charged the defendant with 10 separate counts of Medicaid-related fraud. The jury convicted her of two of those counts, acquitted her of seven of those counts. She testified at trial, and at sentencing, not only did she not receive an obstruction enhancement, the court did not find that she had perjured herself, but in fact gave Ms. Gray a non-guideline sentence below the guideline level. I think those are important factors because what we really are here to talk about is the providing by the government a very significant and material evidence to the defendant's case. But that was not provided, in part was provided at all, but was not provided until just prior to the last defense witness was to testify. And that, Your Honors, is time-stamped information related to Medicaid fraud. The defense had made efforts, substantial efforts, and actually had sought a continuance early in this case and then later again for several months in which to obtain and review information from Indiana Medicaid. We were provided in that process after our expert actually had meetings with the agents in this case from Indiana Medicaid with what was described to us as the flat file. However, what we learned on the second to last day of trial, 2 days before the trial ended, and when our final witness was to take the stand, our expert, is that the government actually had in its possession additional time-stamped information which demonstrated when, in fact, specific billers with the two companies at issue actually
Were you her lawyer at the trial?
I was.
Did you ask Sudoth, is that how you pronounce his name?
Mr. Sudoth, yes.
Sudoth. Did you ask him whether there were other billers?
Your Honor, I don't believe that I specifically asked that question. However, the testimony during the trial and actually elicited by the government was quite clear that it was Sudoth's position that Ms. Gray was the only Medicaid biller for his company. Now, there were other billers who handled other aspects of billing, but in terms of the computerized billing, Mr. Sudoth testified that he was the only biller.
Now, when you received, you did eventually, didn't you, receive this timestamp information which shows some bills are separated by only 1 second or 2 seconds?
We received a facsimile of one day. It turned out to be July 15th, Your Honor, of 2004, which was a very significant date. We received that by facsimile the night before our expert was to take the stand the next morning.
But couldn't you have called Sudoth back and asked him, you know, how can you say there was only one biller when you have this these timestamp records?
Well, Your Honor, actually, at that point in time when we received the facsimile with a cover sheet that this said that these were ICN numbers, we did not recognize what, in fact, this document was.
Did you ask what it was?
Yes, we did.
In fact, the next morning
in trial when we began, I specifically brought it to the attention of the court that we had received this document.
Yeah, okay, so what did the prosecutor say?
The prosecutor responded to my question that the government was not going to use it. The judge then immediately said, well, then it's obviously irrelevant, call in the jury.
Well, what did you say?
Your Honor, at that point, I proceeded with our case.
Well, why didn't you look at it first?
I did look at it, Your Honor.
Well, didn't you notice these tiny intervals on July 15th.
Your Honor, we've attached the copy of that document.
It's all July 15th. Thank you.
We've attached a copy of that document, Your Honor, to our appendix. This is not a clear document. It is a computer printout.
It's important to your case that there were multiple billers. You get a document that has these timestamps. If you look at just the first page of the document, you'll see on July 15th, you know, some of these are just too close together. Why wouldn't you at that point call back Sudhat and confront him with this?
Well, actually, Your Honor, I don't know that Mr. Sudhat was the witness. If I completely understood what I had in my hand, is the witness that I would, in fact, have called back.
But you say that his testimony was emphatic. Well, maybe you didn't say emphatic. You said he insisted that she was the only bidder. And it seems to me that opens the door for you to say to him, well, that's physically impossible. You can't process these things in 1 second. Government says you can do it in 40 seconds.
Your Honor, it took us literally, even after the trial ended and in the time period that we filed our motion, then realizing that it was Brady material, it took us literally weeks to analyze that data.
I don't understand you. You just read this first page. You see there are timestamps that are so close together, it couldn't be one person.
Well, Your Honor, obviously you were more adapt at that than I was.
No,
I actually showed it to our expert.
I've never seen this
We had received volumes and volumes of similar information. This was actually, what we determined later came from, it's actually dated differently than the documentation we had previously received because it was a foreshadow to the documentation we had received. We then, Your Honor, learned later that not only did the government have in its possession the July 15th date, but it also had July 16th and December, I believe, 9th, that we were never provided until the very end of our Brady litigation when they were told to turn it over. Your Honor, we did not see at that point, with our last witness about to take the stand, the significance of that document.
Ms. Conner, I think that gets, I think, to my concerns, which frankly come from a different direction. Nobody seemed to know that they had this timestamp information until your expert articulates a theory in trial. Somebody asks, on the prosecution side, asks EDS ultimately, is this part of your records? Right?
We never had a Brady hearing in order for us to actually present the court with when the government found this information or how they went about it. But the government presented its own EDS witness, Mr. Davison, on the stand. And what was clear is because the documents that we were previously provided, though we did not have actual timestamp data, and actually Mr. Davison had testified that they did not maintain the computer information from where that submission was made, because that was actually asked. What Mr. Davison had testified is that, in fact, he estimated that it would be billed at as much as every 40 seconds. Now, what we were forced to do then is take the data we were provided and extrapolate from it to determine that, in fact, that was an impossibility. We did not have the information
I understand you didn't have the information.
Yeah.
My concern is, how was the government supposed to, A, know it had the information, and, B, realize that it should have been turned over to you in this very clear form, because if I recall the record correctly, they had to ask, somebody had to spend a weekend writing a new program to capture this information. And I have real concerns about how broadly this principle might apply if we were to agree with you here.
Well, Your Honor, there was never a hearing in this case in terms of all of those representations. What is apparent, though, is that EDS...
Do you disagree with them?
I have no idea when, other than the representation that Ms. Berkowitz had it in her hand that weekend before. I have no reason to doubt that. But the issue is EDS is, in fact, the entity
I understand,
that holds it.
I understand that. Okay, let me be more specific, okay? It sounds to me like your theory here is would impose on the government an obligation, in essence, to mine computer data, okay, for Brady material. It's information that was not known to the prosecutors, was not known to the agents, didn't know that they had it. And, you know, Brady comes from a different era when information was a scarcer, rarer thing than the oceans of data available to us in computerized records. Let me just spill out some horribles here, and you tell me why your theory doesn't go there, okay? Let's suppose the federal government has computerized data about witnesses in trials. The IRS has records. Social Security has records about employment, about finances. The Medicaid contractors or Medicare contractors may have extensive data about somebody's health care. Lord knows how many emails there might be involving a person, this witness, among all government agencies. The National Security Agency intercepts international telephone calls. Military records about somebody could show things about employment, about prior mental illness that might be deemed relevant to credibility. Where do we draw those lines?
Well, this is a very different situation than the broad expanse of almost some type of a FOIA request that we're talking about, what the example is talking about. In this case, EDS is intricately intertwined with Indiana Medicaid. They are actually collecting all of the data for Indiana Medicaid. This is not an offshoot in the sense that it's another agency out
right.
there in
but
space.
But the information is not readily available.
That I don't know that we would agree with, but we have no means of questioning that until we actually have an individual on the stand, at least on a Brady hearing, Your Honor. Because Mr. Davison was the government expert. He obviously knew this information existed. And so in this case, this is not that the government would have to seek out or question someone that they did not even know who to question.
Well, how do they even know that they, first, that they have the information, and second, that it's exculpatory?
Well, Your Honor, it was very clear from the outset of these proceedings that we were questioning and talking about how long it takes to actually enter this document.
Where do we find that? How early do we find
Mr.
that in
Davison
records?
Mr. Davison testified regarding it. We talked about the entry of data.
So was your cross of the government expert?
I believe so, Your Honor, that we actually began. It was very clear.
I don't
clear.
See how that's the issue. I thought it was agreed that it takes at least 40 seconds, and therefore that 1 second, 2 seconds indicates there are multiple billers.
Actually, it was not agreed, Your Honor.
No one could think this can be processed. This can be done in 1 second, right?
Your Honor, that's correct. And actually, the data before April, when there's an issue about whether our client was involved in all the billing, we're talking about between 55 seconds from the data we now have, 55 seconds, and somewhere around a minute and a half per entry. However, our expert said it could take as long as 2 to 3 minutes.
Well, I know, but as long as it's more than 2 seconds, I don't understand.
Absolutely.
That seems a different issue.
Well, and what's
the question is whether there were billings that were too close together to be done by one person. That's the question.
That is the question. And this information.
And what Judge Hamilton is trying to extract is what would have been involved for the prosecutor to obtain this information? What would they have to do?
Your Honor, Mr. Davison obviously would have known about it because he was the EDS. He was their expert. He worked with the agents in preparing this case. I'm getting very low on time.
He would know about this.
It's my understanding that he's the person who produced it, Your Honor. And the problem is that what we ended up doing is extrapolating and saying to the jury, it's not even possible that one person could have done this billing based on the information that we had, because if, in fact, we're talking about an average of 40 seconds, not even our 2 to 3 minutes, there's no way one person could have done this billing. Well, what the government obviously had in its possession, whether Ms. Berkowitz knew about it prior to her closing or not, shows clearly now that, in fact, there had to have been multiple billers working at the same time, Your Honor. I am out of time. I do think it's important that we point out that in closing, and one of the arguments that we've raised, is once this information has been provided to the defense, and clearly it's been within the government's possession for a number of days, the government still got up in closing and argued that Ms. Gray was, in fact, the only biller. That was, in fact, the only biller, and that she had really kicked in order to get all this billing done in one day, and, in fact, apparently worked all night to do so.
With my colleague's indulgence, could I just ask and follow up on one other thing, Ms. Conner? If I understand this data right, the very close intervals that indicate multiple billing all occurred well after the time period covered by count one, the conspiracy that went through the April 1st, 2004 change in the billing rules when Medicaid said we're going to stop allowing you in essence to upcode, I think is the term, on the ambulance stuff. If that's correct, then why would the fact that there are multiple billers several months later have any impact on the government's case with respect to count one?
Your Honor, I think it would have a heavy impact, and especially when we put that in the context of also the ostrich instruction, Your Honor, and the court statements regarding Mr. Suda's credibility regarding his being ill the day of trial. When we put that all together in a cumulative way, it's clear that the jury could have been led to believe, based on the evidence between April and August of 2004, that, in fact, if Ms. Gray did not know it, she should have known that there was a fraud going on. Because it's such extensive billing, if one person was actually doing all that billing, certainly there should have been suspicions. But, Your Honor, in this case, what we've pointed out is that there's no evidence of avoidance, but there's clearly overflow in terms of Ms. Lionel Gray's knowledge and how the jury would have assessed her knowledge based on that specific information.
But would you agree she was the only biller through the period covered by count one?
Well, we only know what Ms. Gray billed, and that is 8 to 10 hours a week, Your Honor. And whether or not the jury may have concerns that there was other fraudulent billing going on.
That's a lot of billing.
I beg your pardon?
That's a lot of billing.
8 to 10 hours a week?
Yeah. If it only takes a couple of minutes, on your theory, to bill.
Well, Your Honor,
it depends on how many services are legitimately being provided, right?
Right. And the testimony was that Ms. Gray did bill directly from timesheets that were submitted by the drivers. So certainly that would
10
have
hours a week is 600 minutes. So 300 separate bills a week with their one vehicle?
Yes, Your Honor, but if we look at the times, there's chunks of time where billing is being done. It's not continuous 8 hours a day for 1 week. It's time and again. She's sitting down. She's
did
billing.
Did they have 300 legitimate customers?
Your Honor, it was a working company. It was a working.
Yeah. That's not the question.
Let me ask you, where'd she get this large amount of money for the franchises?
The franchise money came from the Dovey's account.
From the what?
From the Dovey's account. That is the company,
Dovey,
the transportation company. That was established. The money came from the Dovey's account, and Mr. Sudeth actually did, in fact, agree with Ms.
Why would she get all this money?
She did not get
if
the
she's
money.
Just working from home part-time a few hours a week, where's all this money coming from?
Your Honor, the money is coming from Dovey's to pay for the franchises. She is working 12, 16 hours a day, and that was very clearly established in the record at the other locations. That's why the whole issue of
She's
knowledge.
She's working 12 to 16 hours a day doing what?
Running the subway. and the curve.
Yes, I know, but she got the money for the franchise.
What
had she done to earn that money? If she's only working a few hours a week for Dovey's.
Your Honor, though the companies were in her name for the subway and the curb, they were owned by Randy Sudduth. So the money was coming from Randy Sudduth's Dovey's company into the subway and to the curbs. But both Randy Sudduth actually did testify that, in fact, those companies were put in Wynell Gray's name because he had a felony, and he did not believe that he would be able to be the named owner of those companies. And there was a great deal of testimony from varying individuals on both sides
defrauding Subway.
That's not true, because he was apparently present for much of this. But they were in her name. He was present at closings. He was present at other things. But the witnesses all agreed that, in fact, Randy Sudduth was the owner of the subway and the curb.
She worked for nothing to begin with, right?
For a very long time, she worked for absolutely nothing.
When did she start getting paid?
Your Honor, I believe she started actually collecting money, and I apologize, I'm going to get this wrong, I fear. But once the franchises were opened, she actually was given a $40,000 bonus from Randy Sudduth, but I know that it was a good year before she received some money. And then she received, I believe, $2,200 every 2 weeks, which was payment for her running those two companies.
How much did she receive altogether?
Your Honor, I apologize. I don't have that
from Dovey's, not from Subway or that other.
Your Honor, I don't have the specific figure. Maybe Mr. Holler does. I wouldn't want to misstate it. I do recall that one of her tax returns was for $63,000.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Connor. Mm-hmm. Mr. Holler?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The government did not violate Brady in this case because it did not suppress any material evidence. Dealing first with Judge Hamilton's point, we do not believe that the principles of Brady can be extended to the facts of this particular case. We would say, based on the principles of this case in Kyle's and in Crivens, this Court's decision, we believe Brady covers situations where the government or its agents knows information, or where it's, I guess, asked for that information in the case of Crivens and just doesn't bother to follow up on it. In this case, nobody knew that there was timestamp data. There's no evidence that anyone.
Well,
the government
Ms. Connor said that Davison knew.
There's no evidence in the record that Davison knew, Your Honor, and the only affidavits that come in from this case, which are attached to record Exhibit 136, are from a IT specialist and information officer in this case, who is not Davison. Davison is the witness who testifies on behalf of EDS, but he was never asked, and there is no information that he knew. Even if he did know, which I think is counterfactual, that there was the ability to retrieve this data, he certainly did not know the contents of this specific data. And I think that that's important as well, Your Honor, because the question is it the responsibility of the government, as Judge Hamilton pointed out, to mine data on behalf of the defense? Keep in mind as well, the defense did not turn over the exhibits that prompted us to ask EDS whether this data was even maintained until the government closed its case. That's in the record as well, that the defense, at the close of the government's case, turned over final charts, which included the new exhibit, Miller B5, which is a chart that specifically sort of lays out, this is the number of claims on July 15th divided by the amount of time that we're saying it takes, and this is how long, 70 hours, it would have taken. That is what launched us to try to seek the information. And as we've put in affidavits, which I don't believe were ever contested by the defense, which is why Judge Moody didn't see the need to have a hearing, we at that point asked for a continuance. That's in the record at the end of on the fourth day of trial, Ms. Gray testified, and then Ms. Miller was going to testify. And we asked at the end of Ms. Gray's testimony, this is around transcript 4, page 199, we need a continuance because we need to try to get additional data about this to defend this new chart. And Ms. Connor essentially admits, defense counsel, essentially admits, yes, we just turned these charts over, and the government is given additional time and says that it wants that additional time to try to obtain further information about the data. Then they give the data over the weekend. They get the data. They go to EDS and say, can we get this? They say, we don't know. We'd have to write a program. There's no way we can get, you know, this, the 300 pages of data that were eventually turned over. What do you want? And we ask for three specific dates, July 15th, July 16th, and December 9th, which relates to the Lane fraud, which is dropped out of the case. And they say, we don't think you can even get you that. So we say, just get us July 15th. We get that. We turn it over. And, I mean, you know, then the beginning of day five, you know, Ms. Connor raises the issue to the court, and the AUSA says, Your Honor, this exhibit, this is a direct quote, we received from defense counsel on the 15th, in response to the exhibit we received from defense counsel on the 15th, which identified a statistical analysis of claims, we went back to the 15th of July to determine if we could find out the time input for each one of these claims. It is in response to defendant's newly received expert information that we produced and obtained that information. So that's what we told her. And if that wasn't clear enough that this was time-stamped data, it was incumbent on the defendant to ask for more information from the government, ask for more information from the court, ask for a continuance. When you look at the defendant's case that they rely on principally, the Garner case from the Sixth Circuit, the government did something similar. They turned over, in that case, just phone records in the middle of trial, and the defense said, I don't know what this is. I need more information. I need a continuance. The district court said no, and the Sixth Circuit probably said, that's an abuse of discretion. But when the defendant never asks for a continuance, I don't know what more should be sought here.
With regard to the volume of these timestamps, is they collected for the entire state, EDS?
EDS is the payer for all of Indiana Medicaid, so yes, I think they have to write a program to extract that information.
All ambulance runs throughout the entire state would be.
Yeah, they would have to extract this from those. And they indicated after trial, to clarify, we asked for three dates. We got one. We turned it over. EDS then, on their own, got the other two for us. The trial was over. We did not turn that over. We notified in response to the Brady information that it had been retrieved by EDS. After Ms. Connor made an issue of that post-trial, we disclosed that to her. And then the rest of the information was never retrieved by the government. The defense subpoenaed it post-trial. EDS wrote a letter that's in the record, that's at record 152 to the court, saying it's probably going to take us about 2 weeks to retrieve all of that information, even though we've already written the program. So, you know, it would have been up to the court to decide whether they wanted to take a two-week continuance or mistry the case or what. But when that wasn't even presented to the court, I don't think there was any error by the court in doing so. So the government did not suppress any evidence because it didn't have any of that information available to it during the trial. And I don't think that Brady extends to this sort of information that hasn't been tested. I think I analogized it into the brief to if there's a DNA test that could have been performed on a sample, the fact that the government has the sample in its possession doesn't mean that that's Brady information. What it is Rule 33. It's newly discovered evidence. It's evidence that's come to the information of the government after trial. There's a rule that's written for this. And that's what it covers. But the standard, of course, is different. Instead of the defendant just having to show that there's a reasonable probability of a different outcome, which we don't think the defendant can prove here, especially as to count one, because, in fact, the evidence shows there weren't multiple billers during the time frame covered by that count. But instead, the standard is, would she probably be acquitted? And in light of the overwhelming evidence of her guilt, the evidence
could
of fraud.
Could you go back? Yes? I think you said this, but I missed it. So, It was your argument, your theory that she was the only biller. Wasn't that, or isn't that what Suda said
on direct testimony, so this was what we told him, that she was responsible for Medicaid billing and no other Dovey's employee shared that responsibility. In other words, she mostly worked from home, and there were other employees in the office who did other tasks, including managed care billing and stuff that didn't have anything to do with Medicaid. Her husband would come, or Sudith would take the billing to her. That was the testimony. We gave all of the stuff to her. All of the stuff got billed. Now, there was no focus in our direct examination. Our testimony was, we gave her all the bills. All the stuff got billed. There wasn't really, I guess, any thought in our mind as to whether she did it herself or had somebody else or some friend of hers do it. It wasn't a focus of our case. Now, on recross examination, Ms. Connor asked the leading question, isn't it true that you told the government that Gray did absolutely all the billing? So in response to that leading question, he says yes. Now, by that, does he mean I stood over her and I watched her and I know that she did all the billing? Did I ask her the question and she said all the billing? We don't know. All he says is we gave her the trip tickets, or later on, of course, he also testifies. She came to us and essentially said, look, we can do this all fraudulently, and then this Medicaid
fraud.
Now,
at some point, though, the defense said there were multiple billers.
The defense, what happens is the defendant testifies on day four. I didn't do any.
Oh, she testified herself.
She testified herself, and she says, I didn't do any fraudulent billing. Every trip I billed, there was a ticket for. If there was a trip that got billed where there wasn't a ticket, somebody made that up. And, of course, the evidence is there's no trip tickets for the vast majority of these claims. Then her expert gets on the stand and says, okay, here's the deal. It takes 3 minutes to bill a claim, which she testifies as well. She says, it took me 3 minutes to bill a claim, which, of course, this data is not very helpful to her on, since the data shows even when there was only one person billing, it was taking about 50 seconds a claim, sometimes even less. So that's what the data shows. But she testifies it took about 3 minutes. Her expert says it takes 3 minutes to bill a claim. On July 15th, there were 1,400 claims. That would take 70 hours. We go back on redirect, and Davison, the witness that's become an issue now, testifies. And we have two witnesses, I would point out. We had one who was Davison, and Davison testifies, look, it doesn't take 3 minutes to bill one of these claims. It only takes about 40 seconds. And he, in fact, has a mock-up in the courtroom and shows sort of what she has to do. And the reality is, to do a real claim, it might take a minute or two, because if you're doing a real claim, you're putting in new patient names, new patient IDs. But all they're doing is, you know, patient, you know, David Holler, this date, one trip. Next, you know, June 7th, June 8th, June 9th, June 10th. They're billing 30 trips a month. So it doesn't take 2 minutes. It takes about 35 or 40 seconds. So we had him testify, and he points out, you know, so it wouldn't take, it just in passing, really the focus is rebutting her testimony that it took her 3 minutes a claim. He says, so it wouldn't have taken 70 hours. It would have only taken 16 hours. And Ms. Connor properly gets up on cross and says, well, Mr. Davison, have you ever known anybody who could bill for 12 or 14 hours a day of doing data entry without taking breaks? He says, well, no. So the jury already has before it that it's pretty unlikely that she took that she did this. And we had another witness who testified who showed in Weston, admits Weston Exhibit 13, that shows just the hundreds of claims long before June. You know, in April and May, they're submitting dozens of claims. You know, in early April, they're submitting claims, 112 claims
so,
for seven
so at
people.
What point, then, do you start looking for timestamp information?
We looked for timestamp information.
Is this after Davis, after you have this dispute between 40 seconds and 3 minutes, or?
At that point, we had the July 15th data, and that had already been disclosed and turned over. So we had that information.
Oh, this sheet with
the first one day, the timestamp.
Okay, so what was the origin of that? What had caused you to ask EDS? That's the part I missed.
That's when she turned over her chart. Miller turned over her chart before she testified and said, I'm going to testify that it would have taken 70 hours for one person to bill all these claims.
I see. So that's
her expert.
So you're saying when her expert was going to do the 70 hours, you then start looking for timestamp information?
Right. And this is all we can get. And our point essentially is she's lying about how long it takes her to bill claims. In addition, I mean, we're focusing now, Judge Posner, on this very, very narrow point. And our point was much broader, which is this woman gets over $500,000 from this company. She's identified as the vice president. She makes a claim that
she gets how much? I'm sorry.
I think it's in my brief as to how much she gets. I think it's $514,000 was the total amount that went into her account.
She argues some of it is from Subway and that other.
Well, she says that some of it is for Subway and Curves. That's her testimony. But, for example, this was her testimony, Your Honor. She says they had a separate account in her name for Subway. They had a separate account in her name for Curves, and they had her personal bank account. Her testimony is, Randy Suddeth gave me $130,000. He told me this money could only be used on Subway and Curves, and I deposited that money into my personal checking account. But I didn't use any of that money on my personal expenses. I only used it on Subway and Curves. So this is, I mean, this is pretty ludicrous information, Your Honor. So that's what the government is focusing on, is how absurd her testimony is. And I would point out, Your Honor, she had people, character witnesses, who testified for her, who essentially said, I worked for her for free at Subway. I worked for her for free at Curbs. I would do anything for this woman. So our point, And all of that is simply to say we don't know who these extra billers were. But it's far more likely that they were people that she recruited, because the extra billing occurs right before she needs the $280,000 in order to get the Subway franchise. It's far more likely that that's the case than that Sudduth somehow had other people billing false trips while having her. What's the purpose? What's the purpose of having her continue to bill legitimate trips and having somebody else bill false trips? Why not cut her out and just have somebody do all the trips? It doesn't make any sense. So that was our purpose, and that was our point in making those particular arguments, Your Honor.
Mr. Holler, can I ask you about a procedural matter? And Ms. Connor raised this, and I should have asked her about it. She told us that there was never any evidentiary hearing about the Brady claim after the trial. Was that requested?
To my knowledge, Your Honor, it was not requested. I don't know that there was any request sort of in the alternative for a hearing. It was essentially, here's the information. This shows that I went on Brady. I should prevail. I don't think that information that was ever specifically placed before the court. But again, Your Honor, even if you thought someone – there certainly was not, to my knowledge, a direct request for an evidentiary hearing. It was more just, this is Brady. We prevail.
Yeah, okay.
To the extent – again, Your Honor, I don't think that there really are factual disputes sufficient to bring that into evidence. We submitted an affidavit from Sandy Weston attached to our 136, which is our response. And she testified that she did not know. She was the government's lead investigator. She did not know. No AUSA knew. And I do think, Your Honors, that it's I don't think you really necessarily need to go that far, because nobody knew. Nobody at EDS knew the specific content of the data, and I think that is what is important. And I don't see even Ms. Connor disputing that here. But I don't think that the fact that someone at EDS knows is relevant. I don't really think that Davison necessarily even counts as a member of the prosecution team. He's a witness. But the fact that he's a witness doesn't mean that he's a member of the prosecution team. In Rodriguez-Andrade, this court said that a police report that's in the possession of the victim, who obviously is going to be a critical witness in the case, the fact that the victim didn't turn that over doesn't mean the government violated its Brady obligations. So I don't think that it necessarily goes that far.
The argument, though, is that this is not a one-time kind of relationship. This is a the way the Medicaid program is run, these are long-term, highly sophisticated contracts, many, many millions of dollars, and everybody knows that fraud prosecution and cooperation with that is going to be part of the deal, right?
I think that that's true, Your Honor, but and certainly it is, and certainly in this case we actually had Richard Walton, who was a witness for the Indiana Medicaid Fraud Unit, testify, and he said, my job is to sort of manage some of this, and as part of that, we've sort of got this thing called the flat file that is what defense attorneys have requested sort of from time immemorial. And apparently no defense attorney or no government prosecutor has ever requested timestamp data. Nobody's ever thought it was important, so it's never been included. I understand your basic point, Your Honor, and certainly I could envision a situation where EDS is a member of the prosecution team. I don't think it rises to that level here. In any event, there's certainly nothing in any of the briefing at the district court level where Ms. Connor specifically says, I think Davidson knew, I need an evidentiary hearing on this point. That point specifically was not raised. And for those reasons, I see my time has expired, and I would ask the court to affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Holler. Ms. Connor, we'll give you another minute if you have anything.
And could you answer that last question of mine? I should have asked you earlier, Ms. Connor.
As part of our motion, we did, in fact, request a hearing. Is that the question,
yes,
Your Honor? That would be in our motion. I don't have a copy of that in front of me, but I do believe we anticipated a hearing on that matter.
We'll track it down.
I would point out a couple of things. Yes, we did have character witnesses. Yes, we had employees of Dovey's, and we had employees of Subway testify to establish that, in fact, our client was working 12 to 16-hour days. I don't believe that anyone testified that they, quote, worked for free. In fact, we had several young people who testified that were clearly probably minimum wage employees, but actually being paid. I'm not quite sure where that came from the government. I would add that we received this information just prior to our last witness testifying. So Mr. Davison had testified earlier. I believe he was recalled in rebuttal. However, our expert testified 2 to 3 minutes per entry. He testified to 40. To the extent that ours was high, there was low when we look at actual data. But I think it's important to keep in mind that when the prosecution closed this case, It was stated specifically, when you want something as badly as this defendant wanted it, you will do anything to get it, including staying up for hours on end to bill nonstop. She's the biller. This is the statement made by the prosecution.
Yeah, and you had the information which contradicted it.
Well, this was the statement made after the government had the information.
Yeah, and you had the information. You had the same information.
At that point,
if you'd read that page, you would have known that there was at least on July 15th there was another biller.
And Your Honor, if I should have asked for continuance at that point, I should have asked for it. I would also point out that it's not correct that the government had never received the defense exhibits regarding the expert. Numerous exhibits have been provided to the government as we put their information from the flat file into charts. There were a couple of extra ones. The government asked for additional time to look at it. The court gave them that.
Those were about this issue. Those were the charts about this issue.
Those were charts that were taken from the government's flat file and put into
no, but about the timing.
They were not stamp data.
No. That were about the volume and how many hours it would have taken.
Right, which came directly from the flat file, which we were provided by the government. But those exhibits were provided earlier in most part.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Connor. And is this a private defender's company or something? What? This is not the federal defenders, pardon?
I'm a federal defender.
There's two programs. There's a straight employee.
I see. This is...
You're not a direct employee, but it's a federal defender. You are a federal defender.
Why does it say
And we see her often.
What?
We see Ms. Connor often.
I was just puzzled by the fact that your brief says Federal Community Defenders Incorporated.
But it's different than, say, than the Northern District of Illinois, which has a federal defender program, right?
No, they're the same entity.
Why are you corporate?
Why it was incorporated.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we thank your enterprise and you for your...